Medicaid, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dr. Steve Pachenik, and the first podcast that I'd like to make is a story about a movie that's coming out on December 19th called Zero Dark Thirty, directed by a woman who I have a very great respect for, Kathryn Bigelow, a director who really is the first woman ever to win the Academy Awards as a woman for a film that I thought was exceedingly good called Hurt Locker. So I'm going to tell you the things that I like about her and I like about what she's done about the film Zero Dark Thirty, which I have not seen, but I know quite a lot about. So let's first talk about the subject matter. The subject matter of the film as it's presented, because it's going to be a big blockbuster December 19th, and I hope many of you may see it, and many of you may not see it. I can't tell you to go or not to go to see it, but this is my attitude towards it. Number one, in the world of fantasy, fiction does prevail. So the right of Hollywood and the right of Kathryn Bigelow and the Academy of Arts and Sciences, which dominates Hollywood, has the right to distort or to fantasize any point of fact or fiction. But this is fiction on steroids, this movie in particular. And why do I say that? Number one, once again, the lie that Osama bin Laden was killed and by the SEAL team has been propagated not only by President Obama to get him reelected. He knew that was a lie. I knew that was a lie. The CIA that I've worked with knows that it was a lie. Military intelligence knows it's a lie. Everybody in the intelligence community, and now by now, almost the whole world knows that that's an absolute lie. Now, why do I say it's a lie? Osama bin Laden was already dead or about to be dead. I didn't make that up. I basically knew of the man because he had a disease called Marfan syndrome. Marfan syndrome is not something that I, as a physician, can make up. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist and neurologist. It's a disease that's genetically inherited. He had that disease. He was born of a Yemeni mother and a Saudi father. He was involved in Afghanistan, where I knew about his activities. And we knew then from his medical records that he had Marfan syndrome. And what that means, in effect, is that your connective tissues will disintegrate and that you have a very short lifespan. Now, that type of termination of a disease is imminent. It's not something that you can wish and prolong. It's pretty much final. And the answer for that is that in the May or in the summer of 2001, under our President Bill Clinton and Sandy Berger, the National Security Advisor, Tom Dooley of the CIA Medical Division was sent to Dubai, where already Osama bin Laden was dying in the American Anglo-American Hospital. And you can check the records. I didn't make it up. The CIA never denied that. The intelligence community never denied it. But I knew that. It was a point of fact that he was already dying, if not already about to die. And then what happened on 9/11, 2001, was the storyline that Osama bin Laden created an attack on the United States and the World Trade Center, and then the rest of it, you know. I don't have to elaborate it. And the next day, I went on the radio and announced that this was a lie, that basically the attack was a stand-down, a false flag, created by Bush Jr., Cheney, Nixon, and the neocons. But I made a very important decision, and I made a prediction that was what we call in the psychological war business a trap for the intelligence community, because I knew the intelligence community under Cheney was not that sophisticated or very bright. Number one, because Bush Jr. was not bright, neither was Cheney, neither was Michael Hayden, who was then head of the CIA, nor was Steve Hanley or other neocons. And I knew they made a very serious mistake by not really considering the disease factor of Osama bin Laden when they described him as the major attacker who had escaped captivity, and he had hidden in Tora Bora. Now, the only picture we've ever seen of Osama bin Laden is one where he's carrying a renal dialysis machine along with his compatriot, who happens to be El-Zawahiri. Now, ironically, El Swahiri had been brought to America a few years before that by my former intelligence colleague, Zalmay Khalilzad, who was in the CIA, recruited by the CIA, and an Afghani who eventually became our ambassador to Iraq and Afghanistan. But be it as it may, the most important statement that I made on September 12th not only was the indictment of Rumsfeld, that this was a stand-on and a false flag, and Rumsfeld then accused me of saying, well, if that's the case for the Republicans, then the Democrats must have had a stand-down and false flag for Pearl Harbor, which I did not agree, since the man in charge of this at the Defense Department was Paul Wolfowitz, Deputy Secretary of Defense, who created this entire stand-down in conjunction with his neocon friends. I said that here was the key prediction, that whenever they will terminate the war, and I knew Bush Jr. could not terminate the war because we were failing in our military expeditions, we will declare that on the day of that termination that Osama bin Laden was killed. Well, lo and behold, a year and a half ago, on May of 2012, President Barack Obama announced that Osama bin Laden had been killed in Pakistan by SEAL Team 6. And immediately I was brought back to the forefront to say, well, what did you think of this? And I said, well, what am I to think of it? It's absurd. There was a dead man who never existed, and then you're telling me that the Navy got involved and SEAL Team 6 went out and attacked a mortuary to kill a man who never existed and shot him in the head, and then they went out of their way to create a most convoluted story of how they buried the body in the water. And I don't have to go into that detail. Everybody knows that around the world, and it's become kind of a joke where the American government can't even explain why they don't have the DNA or the pieces of the parts. Well, be it as it may, the most important part of this story, and why I come back to say this on the podcast, is that the intelligence community could not give up the storyline that Osama bin Laden was killed. So they tried to convince me through meetings and through other videos and all, and I said to them, look, let's not bother each other. I'm a member of the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, member of the National Military Intelligence Association, but also I'm a member of the Academy of Arts and Sciences as a producer. And I said to them, you know, go make a storyline. You know, if you want to write fiction, you write fiction, I'll write fiction. Well, lo and behold, I got to give credit to my colleagues in the CIA and the military, and they went out and picked the ultimate, I think, sucker of all times, and that's Catherine Bigelow, which is quite unfortunate for her and for me, because I had a lot of respect for Catherine Bigelow. I don't know her, but I had always admired her work. In the first film she did was Steel Blue, about a woman, Janet Lee Jones, who was Janet Lee, who was fascinated by the notion of the gun, man's use of the gun, and what it meant. And then eventually Catherine Bigelow matured as a director into making a film called Point Break, where she indicts various presidents for stealing from the American public, and then goes on to do a film called K-19, or The Widowmaker, and then ends up with another film called Hurt Locker, which I thought was very good and showed about, demonstrated the effectiveness of our a capability to debomb an IED, although we don't do that with humans, we do that with robots. Nevertheless, the CIA and our military intelligence has a unit, and this is important for you Americans to understand. You and I, as American citizens, pay for a special unit in the CIA to go out to Hollywood, as well as the Department of Defense, and sell stories about themselves and their heroics. Now, I don't care whether they sell a story and think that they're Superman or they're Spider-Man. The problem is that we're funding that. And the second problem is they are not really very effective. The CIA has been, from historical points of view and my own experience over five presidencies, a total and complete disaster. If you don't believe me, then ask President Jimmy Carter and Admiral Stanfield Turner, who was the head of the CIA, where he fired 4,000 human operatives in the CIA because they were a major disaster. If you're not a Democrat and you're a Republican, then I refer you to General Eisenhower, who basically said that the CIA is nothing more than a group of disastrous individuals who will create a lot of damage to the American legacy, and he called it a legacy of ashes. And that's been true. In my experience over 30 years, there have been some extremely good CIA operatives, Don Gregg, Jim Lilly, Paul Redman, Fritz Ehrmath. These are well-known people who came out of the OSS, major study groups. But now most of the CIA are really secondary hacks. They're mercenaries who are hired by companies around the 128 belt, and they're really not very good, and neither are many of our military intelligence operatives. But what they're very good at is selling themselves as an effective unit. So the first story they went out to sell this year that you might see is Ben Affleck's story called Argos. And again, as an Academy Award nominee, I have to nominate some of the films. I found that Ben Affleck was again seduced and co-opted by the CIA in a storyline which had some truth to it, that is the end of the Iran hostage siege, but it was pretty poorly directed, not very effective, and really belied the fact that most of the Iran hostage siege was really a disaster created by the incompetence of the CIA. That is, for 20 years, they had given me, the Deputy Assistant Secretary, the Secretary of State, Cyrus Vance, and others, very poor and inaccurate intelligence about the state of the Shah of Iran and the fact that Iran was in a revolutionary state and not in a non-revolutionary state. So, in fact, the CIA had failed. But what they didn't fail at was to sell a story to Ben Affleck about their little tricks and picadillos at the end of the hostage siege, which really had no significance to the underlying disaster that they created. So now we go back to Zero Dark Thirty, where Catherine Bigelow has been approached by CIA and Defense Department and given very important, if not classified, information about, quote, what the truth is about the killing of Osama bin Laden. But as I told you, Osama bin Laden was already dead. There is no killing of Osama bin Laden. SOCOM, McRaven, Rear Admiral, knows very well that he's lying. SEAL Team 6 may have attacked a mortuary or a building which was located really next to Pakistani West Point, and it was absurd to talk about the fact that they killed Osama bin Laden because there was no evidence, there was no Osama bin Laden. She nevertheless took the story, ran with it, created a fictitious character, some CIA analyst who was persevering and, irrespective of being a Democrat, Republican, was the one who really drove the entire search and destroy mission of Osama bin Laden and created this film, Zero Dark Thirty. Now, what makes this film an indictment of Catherine Bigelow and the entire Hollywood community is the fact that a woman who had been extremely effective in producing and developing films has lost her credibility. That's Catherine Bigelow. She was not only co-opted by the CIA, but is in fact really belongs to the CIA and is now considered a double or an asset for the CIA, who's been doubled by the CIA and the military. Now, whether the Republicans care about it or Democrats, that's totally irrelevant. What has happened is that the CIA has now ensconced itself so well into Hollywood that Ben Affleck has been able to do a film that was dictated by the CIA. There's been a whole series of film called Safe House with Denzel Washington that's been dictated by the CIA, which is also not very good, although he's an excellent actor. There's been The Good Shepherd by De Niro, the story of the CIA, highly fictionalized, of James Jesus Angleton, again provided by the CIA. Then the CIA came in and provided us with a TV show called Homeland, total fabrication of their ability to either penetrate or double up or be able in any way to penetrate a terrorist group. If anything, they create terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda, then send them out to Syria, and then they say, we attack them. So there's a game that in the real world of the CIA, they really don't effectively play, and aren't really all that effective. But in the game of creating storylines in Hollywood, they're exceedingly effective, and I tip my hat off to them. But from an American citizen's point of view and a taxpayer's point of view, we have a very serious problem, and this is the reason what the problem is. The CIA has an effect, along with the military, is dictating now to Hollywood, as it had dictated to our corporations and to our military-industrial complex, where and what it should do as they invaded Iraq and really made a huge mistake and cost us thousands of human lives, as they invaded Afghanistan, another mistake, and I go on with Syria and so forth and so on. But they have completely co-opted what I consider, and most people consider, the liberal elite establishment of Hollywood. Now, what does that mean? That means that people like Howard Koch, whom I know, and is the president of the Academy of Arts and Sciences, which nominates the Oscars, is a very passive, for the most part, ineffectual individual who's produced several films here and there. But in contrast to his father of 60 years ago, who was in prison and was indicted under the House Un-American Activities Committee, he pales significantly. And so this is what I'm talking about today. Hollywood of today is nothing more than the extension of the CIA, the military, and our military-industrial government in order to propagate and propagandize us into showtime and amuse us. Whereas 60 years ago, the very people who were in Hollywood, the liberals, were fighting that very institution of the intelligence community, the FBI, and they were considered the Hollywood 10. I don't say that they were communists. I don't approve of communists, but they were accused of being communists. These were famous writers like Dalton Trumbo, John Huston, Humphrey Bogart, writers and directors. But for the most part, they all stood together and they said in front of the what's called the House Un-American Activities Committee that we refuse to denounce any of our comrades or any of our fellow citizens in the community of Hollywood and denounce them as either communist or non-communist. And the 10 of them were subsequently arrested. And in contrast to today, they stood up for a principle called the Fifth Amendment, the right not to be self-incriminated. They went to prison. But more importantly, many of our Hollywood filmmakers took the courageous step, unlike today, where they're just the extension of the military and the CIA, like Catherine Bigelow or Steven Spielberg or Kathleen Kennedy. Instead, people like Carol Foreman, who did The High Noon with Gary Cooper, where he was seen as a sheriff fighting against the bad guy when he was deserted by the town citizenry, which was the symbol of the desertion of his own community in Hollywood. We saw films like On the Waterfront. And there, on the waterfront, Elia Kazan, who was a squealer, a member of the Communist Party, and denounced many, many members in Hollywood as communist, and I don't approve of communism. As many of you know, I fought communism, but I don't approve squealers either. He was subsequently countermanded in the film industry by Arthur Miller, who was a very liberal, very courageous proponent of free speech in a movie called A View from the Bridge, where he, in that movie, indicts the squealer. And then there was a counter attack to that, where we had other films called The Thing, which talks about what happens when a person is possessed by a foreign element, i.e. communism, and the supernatural got into the film industry. And then the film industry responded once again with another movie by Arthur Miller called The Crucible, and what happens when you have mass hysteria produced by ideology and false accusations. So American Hollywood and the American citizenry had evolved from a fighting organization for our own freedoms into a very placid, passive, greedy organization, which in the name of liberal concerns and entertainment with greed, and there's nothing wrong with greed, decided that they would go from a fighting strong position to one of acquiescence, accommodation, and being part of the propaganda. So from my point of view, if you want to see the movie with Catherine Bigelow in it, directing it, that's your choice. I refuse to see it. I refuse to attend the Academy Awards because I think the Oscars are nothing more than a cornucopia of self-congratulatory exercises, and is really quite boring. So it's your turn, the American citizen, to say, number one, to the CIA and the military, I don't want you funding and being funded to sell storylines about yourself when there's no need for it, and we need the money for jobs, veterans, and other more important things. And secondly, to say to the Hollywood elite, we don't really want your films anymore. They're really quite boring, and if we need to see propaganda, we can get it any time on Fox News. So thank you for the opportunity to talk to you, and I will get back to you on the next show.